mind and body. Passing out from the pain had only ever resulted in a harsher punishment, while sleep was a luxury he had to earn. He had been younger back then, however. Now he could feel a lifetime of fighting and sleeping rough, gnawing at his bones, and settling into his muscles like a parasite. He knew that choosing to push on wasn't the wise thing to do, but wisdom was of little use when death surrounded them on all sides. Still, the ranger wasn't sure how much more punishment his body could take. The dwarven clay had healing properties, but its effects on humans were limited. Nathaniel was half asleep, with his head resting over Raina's shoulder. The princess was awake, but both elves appeared to have entered some kind of trance overnight, keeping them awake but not present. Before the moon had reached its apex, Asher had seen Raina healing Nathaniel's leg while he slept. The ranger had wanted to dissuade her, sure that she would need all of her magical strength if they were to survive the pit. But he and the princess had bartered too many harsh words of late, and he knew her stubbornness could not be deterred. The princess's stubbornness was a quality Asher had come to adore in the elf. Raina was ready to stand against any and all that would threaten their world. It was a courage he couldn't pin on the recklessness of her age or naivety. The princess was simply a better person than him. Raina was what Verda needed right now. Good people who would do the hard thing and say no to those who would ravage this world. If he was lucky, Asher thought, some of that goodness might rub off on him. Asher reached for their reins and steered the horse with his own, taking them north along the edge of the gorge. The crack in the earth was deep and ran from north to south as far as the eye could see. There was no way of crossing it without making the long trek through the desert or climbing down and back up the other side. Asher had glimpsed some of the monsters that called the gorge their home and knew that way to be folly. The entire area was honeycombed with various entrances, creating a maze of burrows. Somewhere inside all of that was the pit. A pale blue sky was creeping over the land when Asher cleared his throat and woke the others. His back stung, but the ranger clenched his jaw and tightened his grip on the hilt of his broadsword. Nathaniel and Raina got off their horse and joined them by the edge of the gorge. The greycoat tested the strength in his leg, unaware of the magic that had fixed it during the night. Asher kept his mouth shut and peered over the edge, into the nothingness below. A familiar white owl flew over their heads and circled the gorge. "That bird is relentless," Asher said dryly. "He is loyal and very smart." Raina held out her arm so that Ollie could swoop down and land on her leather bracer. The princess stroked his fur and gave the owl a loving kiss on the head. "Well, he can't come where we're going." Asher removed the water skins from the saddles before smacking the horses on the rear. "Everyone take a drink." "What are you doing?" Felin asked as the horses trotted into the desert. "There's nowhere to tie them up, and we won't be coming back out up here." Asher drank from the skin and passed them round. "Where will we come out?" Nathaniel asked. Asher looked across the horizon. "It's always somewhere different." Raina gave him a hard look before her fair features softened. "We have followed you this far. If you have the strength to keep going, then so do I." Her melodic tone was disarming as ever. "You calling me old, princess?" Asher asked with a hint of a smile. The two had reached a truce, which was the most he could ask for with such frayed emotions. "Shall we?" Felin said, checking her blade before sliding the scimitar back into its scabbard. Asher knew there was no avoiding it. He had come this far. He walked up to the edge and looked down, searching for the top of the stairs. "Follow me." The ranger crouched down and made the short drop onto the outcropping. He used to be able to jump down and run along the stairs without a care. The stairs were perhaps a natural formation once upon a time, but over the centuries they had been worn down into easy stepping stones that had formed out of the rock face. Here and there were gaps that needed leaping over, but for the most part it was simply a steep decline into the gorge. "I thought it would be grander," Nathaniel called from the back of the line. "Grand things tend to stand out," Asher replied, doing his very best to suppress the memories invoked by the stairs. How many times had he journeyed back to nightfall after a new kill? The ranger knew the number in his head. He knew how many murders were on his conscience. It was considerably colder by the time they reached the entrance to nightfall. It was just as he remembered it. The doorway was a rough triangular crack in the rock, wide enough to fit two grown men side by side. It was pitch black inside, but there was a warm breeze drifting out into the gorge. It had been twice as foreboding when Nasta Nal Akit had brought him here 40 years ago. As a child, Ashrut felt as if he were walking into the mouth of a demon. Both Phelan and Rayna whispered a spell into their hands and birthed a small orb of light. The orbs floated above them, tethered by magic, and illuminated the entrance floor. Within a few feet, the coarse rock had been replaced with smooth, man-made stone. There were no markings or signs of any kind that one had entered the dwelling of the assassins. Asher inhaled and found his memory tugging at times gone by. His memories of being an outlander were practically gone now, but his time in Nightfall was as a scar in his mind. "Keep the light behind me." The ranger walked a few steps ahead of the elves and sank into the thick shadows. The night's eye elixir came to life in his veins, exposing every dark corner of the ancient sanctum. 3 heartbeats drummed in his ears, and his companion's salty sweat found his tongue. The smell of blood came from all of them, though his own blood was familiar, if nauseating. Asher tried to focus through his pain and fatigue and combine his various senses into one complete awareness. "How big is this place?" Nathaniel asked, drawing his deformed sword. Asher wanted to tell them all to be quiet, but it would make no difference in these halls. Besides the beating of their hearts, any assassin would smell their wounds or hear their steps on the cool stone. They were flies stuck in a web now. "It's designed to be a labyrinth." Asher had gotten lost in the dark more times than he could count. "Where is everyone?" Rayna asked. Asher paused at a junction and relied on his age-old senses to show him the way. After 14 years, many of the identical hallways appeared new to the ranger. His nose detected the distinct odor of rotten flesh and old blood, while his ears heard droplets of water falling down a long shaft. The pit. "This way." Asher strode down the next corridor. "Asher, where is everyone?" Rayna asked again. The ranger tilted his head, sharpening his senses and pushing them to the limits. He couldn't hear, smell, or taste another living body in the area. Even the aroma from the kitchens was absent. "Aladir has cleared them out." Asher shook his head. "The Arrakesh are just soldiers in a war now." To the others, the chamber they were passing through was just another shrouded abyss. But to Asher, he could see the throne that had seated countless mothers and fathers of Nightfall. The shrine to Ibalis, the god of shadows, was by the far wall, its incense long burned out and forgotten. It had been a long time since he had stepped foot in the cradle. From this chamber, he had been given one murderous task after another, each more despicable than the next. "Watch the steps," Asher warned, as they descended into the next chamber, another room he would have been happy to never see again. The ranger came to a stop by the lip of the pit. The orbs floated over the top as the others caught up, their light vanquishing the magic in his veins. It was an odd feeling to be inside Nightfall and be unaware of his surroundings. The darkness was disorientating beyond the light of the orbs. "I've never taken any Night's Eye elixir," Nathaniel said as he looked into the well of black. "But even I can smell that." "It's a different world down there." Asher's flashbacks were that of a nightmare. "Magic will be our greatest advantage." "You remember where you left it?" Phelan asked, skeptically. "I went left." Asher recalled the beast that had been waiting for them at the bottom. "We ran until we found the next tunnel. That creature had shredded 2 of the students in seconds and pursued them immediately. There were only 3 of us left when I hit it. I would remember the tunnel." "Truly?" Phelan asked. Asher wasn't proud of the only answer he had. "I killed the other 2 students and marked the wall with a handprint of blood, just in case I ever needed to find it again." There was a moment's silence. Asher wondered if they were remembering that he hadn't always been a ranger. "Why would you need to find it?" Nathaniel asked. "In case I lost the shard. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it protected me from magic. Back then, I just saw it as an advantage." "And the students?" Rayna asked, but Asher could tell she didn't really want the answer. "They were competition." Rayna took a long breath and nodded her head. "Well, talking about it isn't going to get us anywhere." She made for the built-in ladder. "Why don't we just start looking?" The 3 of them watched the princess boldly begin the descent into darkness. Nathaniel looked to Asher. She's been spending too much time with you. The knight managed to smile, despite the scowl Phelan gave him. The companions made their way down the shaft in silence, guided by the descending orbs. The ranger heard their complaints before he met them at the bottom. The ground was littered with bones and rotten body parts. The smell was invading, and the knight's eye elixir wasn't even raising his senses yet. The atmosphere between the companions changed at the bottom of the pit. There was no levity in all the world that could distract them from their surroundings. This was a realm of monsters. Asher looked into the darkness beyond the white light of the orbs. As a predator himself, he always knew when something was watching him. Phelan. The ranger kept his eyes forward. Cast some light. He pointed his chin at the abyss. The elf wasted no time in raising her hand and unleashing a torrent of fire into the tunnel. The roar was animalistic, but closer to a shrill, as the fire licked the hard shell of a monster that could only be described as teeth and pincers. Its bulk consumed most of the tunnel, as did its maw of razor-sharp teeth. Run! Asher turned about and pushed Nathaniel down the tunnel, where both men were able to avoid the arrow from Rayner's bow. The group followed the end of Asher's cloak, which was the only part of him caught in the light, as he used his extra senses to navigate the labyrinth. The monster howled with Rayner's arrow lodged deep inside its long body, but Phelan's fire clung to its shell and burned the inside of its mouth. Still it chased them. Asher darted down the next tunnel and called for them to follow him, concerned that they would miss the change in direction. The monster turned the corner with enough speed to run up the curved walls and pursue them along the roof of the cave. The ranger's senses detected more movement ahead and down the tunnel to the right. Lots of sharp legs digging into the rock hammered in his ears, and the smell of toxic secretions stung his nostrils. This way! Asher could see the hole in the ground, where the network of tunnels opened up into a crossroads. The hole was too small for the monster to follow them, but only Asher could sense the true height of the drop. The ranger stopped at the hole until the orbs caught up and illuminated the jagged entrance for everyone else. There was no time to argue or consider another route. The monster was gaining on them, and easy to spot, with its fiery shell. It was so close now that Asher could see its mouth was circular and lined with more than one row of teeth. Go! He shouted. One by one they dropped into the hole, leaving Asher until last. The other tunnels were a cacophony of racing monsters now, their clicking mandibles and gnashing teeth easy to hear, even without the elixir in his veins. The ranger dropped down as the giant monster collided with a cave full of other creatures. Before he could roll across the ground of the cave below, blood dripped down from above and coated his cloak. The monsters were feeding off each other, with no fresh prey. The companions snapped up and regrouped back to back. The orbs had followed them down, rendering Asher blind to the environment. Nathaniel and Rayner had their bows drawn, while Asher and Phelan held their swords high. "We went the wrong way," Phelan observed through labored breath. "I know," Asher replied, favoring his right leg. "The left didn't have much life left in it. These tunnels are all connected. We just need to find our way back." "And up," Nathaniel added. Somewhere in the darkness a man cleared his throat. The group spun around to face the direction they thought was a threat, but only an inky abyss stood before them. Outside the reach of the light, a voice broke the silence. "I am afraid going back the way you came is no longer an option." Asher knew that voice, that accent. "Nasta!" "Hello, old friend." Nasta Nell Ackett slowly walked into the light. "It has been a long time." Asher wanted to ask the father 100 questions, but the ranger wasn't sure if he was about to run his broadsword through him instead. This man had been a blessing and a curse on his life for as long as he could remember. It was Nasta who had commanded him to complete the contract on the governor's children, and Nasta again who had ordered his death when he failed. But the southerner had also kept him alive in the dark and taught him to survive. He had even shown a young Asher some affection and taken to him as a true father. "You are the father of Nightfall," Nathaniel stated, his arrow aimed squarely at Nasta's heart. The southerner moved further into the light, revealing his scarred face, devoid of eyes and lids. His white hair and goatee was still curly, but the man was in a disheveled state, dressed in tattered robes and streaked with blood. On his belt was the famous Reaver, the sword of the father, though Nasta was leaning on a long staff of what appeared to be bone. I'm afraid that title has been stripped of me, claimed by Aladir Yalathanil.
What?
Asher blinked the unexpected tears from his eyes.
What are you doing down here?
Aladir left me down here for dead, but I've survived the pit more than once. It holds few secrets from me now. Nasta cocked his head. We must leave here at once. The Razorbacks are coming.
Razorbacks? Rayna asked, her bow lowered now.
I have had time to name some of the monsters that call this hell their home. Come, and quickly.
Nasta turned around and strode down the nearest tunnel.
Asher was hesitant to follow his old master, but it felt so natural to do as he said. The ranger was confident, however, that he could beat Nasta in combat, should he try anything. Nathaniel and the elves followed first, with Asher bringing up the rear, allowing his senses to reattune with the darkness. Indeed, there were several things closing in on them, their charging feet vibrating against the rock. When Asher caught up with them, Nasta had led them to a small cave that could only be entered via a small hole in the wall. Once inside, the southerner covered the gap with a boulder. The orbs illuminated a cave filled with odd bits and pieces collected by Nasta, most of which he had clearly taken from the bodies of fallen students. The ranger shared a moment with Nasta, though there were no eyes to connect with. Asher knew that the father's attention was on him.
"You are wounded," Nasta stated.
"You are all wounded." Without any eyes, the southerner would always be acutely aware of those around him.
"War has returned to Ilion," Asher replied. "Wounds are to be expected."
Nasta nodded his head and perched on an outcropping of rock.
"Valinus, has he returned also?"
"Yes." Rayna expressed the surprise they all felt.
"You know of Valinus?"
"I do. I also know why you are here."
Asher could feel their eyes on him, hoping his familiarity with Nasta would shed some light on his mysterious answers.
"Speak plainly, old man."
"I have missed you," Nasta said, absently.
"Explain."
Asher had little patience at the best of times. "You're in here for the gem, the one you hid during your final trial." Nasta casually removed a strip of cloth off the outcropping to reveal Paldora's gem. The group froze in such a silence that Asher actually heard Rayna's lips part in shock. There it was, the most powerful relic in the world, sat next to an old man with no eyes and no inclination to use it.
"How?"
Asher asked, taking a step towards the gem.
"I saw you hide it, of course. Do you not recall wondering where I was before you entered the pit? It was the first thing you asked me upon your return. I had entered the pit hours before your trial. I watched you every step of the way."
"Why?"
Nasta paused.
"You know why."
Asher knew why. He just couldn't believe it.
The idea that Nasta had intended to protect him during his final trial was a fatherly gesture beyond the southerner's emotional bounds. He was still a killer among killers, and the most manipulative person Asher had ever met.
"Wait," Phelan interjected. "How do you know of Valinus?"
"Ever since I was a student at Nightfall, I have been interested in Aladir. Besides his heritage, the fact that he never wished to rule the assassins was curious. I took several steps over the decades to observe him in secret, to follow him."
Nasta turned his head to Asher.
"That's why I was at Elathia when I found you. Aladir would visit the ruin every now and then. It took me a very long time, too long, to realize that our oldest member had other alliances. Most of his secrets I garnered from his private quarters. It took me years to find a way in without setting off the traps. I found references to Paldora's gem, his true mission, given to him by Valinus."
"You knew I had the gem."
Asher had yet to take his eyes from the relic.
"I suspected for some time. I only believed it when I witnessed your resilience to magic."
"I don't recall that."
Asher was ever suspicious of the father.
"You were not aware. I had a local mage in Carath prepare an elixir enchanted with a deadly spell. It could kill a grown man in seconds. Yet you finished off your entire meal and returned to training."
There it was, the other side to Nasta Nal Akit that Asher would never forget and could never forgive. "This wasn't the life I wanted for you, Asha," Nesta continued. "I didn't want you to be stuck in the middle of Valinus's war. I was happy when I saw you rid yourself of the gem. But you were happy with me living the life of an Arrakesh?" Asha was sure he was only moments away from ending Nesta's life. "You were untouchable as an assassin. You were the best. You would have replaced me someday. But now, you're between Valinus and his prize. You cannot beat him alone." "He isn't alone," Rayna announced. "Take the gem, Asha." The princess reached for the black stone. "Stop!" Phelan, Asha, and even Nesta cried out. "Don't touch it," Phelan warned. "I touched only the shard in Westphalian, and it nearly crippled me." "Indeed," Nesta agreed. "I was lucky to have remained in one piece when I retrieved it." "I don't understand." Rayna looked to Asha. The ranger picked up the gem without any fuss and rolled it around in his hand. "I think my time trapped in the amber spell with it has, I don't know, bound us in some way." Nathaniel added, "A 1,000 years is a long time to grow an attachment." "What will you do now?" Nesta asked. Asha could feel the power of the gem pulsing through his hand and flowing into his body. It was intoxicating. The shard had given him power, but the whole gem had a feeling to it that he had forgotten over the years. "Get us out of here." The ranger held up his hand and pictured the world above in his mind. He would open a portal to the north somewhere outside the arid lands. As he had done before, Asha commanded the magic of the gem to tear through reality and open a gateway. He might as well have been struck by lightning for all the pain that shot through his head. The ranger collapsed against the rock and fell into a heap on the floor, convinced that a storm had been conjured inside his mind. The pain was blinding, and it didn't stop in his head, but ran down into his body, constricting his limbs and cramping his muscles. He finally let go of the gem and rolled away, desperate for breath. "What happened?" Rayna and the others were over him in a second, offering their strength. Asha couldn't find the words. His mind was a mess. "It's too much for him," Nesta said. "Get away," Rayna exclaimed, holding her hand up to Nesta. "You are not to touch him." "We have all witnessed him use the gem's magic before," Phelan replied. "You have seen him use a shard of the gem," Nesta corrected. "As a child, he never called upon the gem's magic. It simply defended him. This was never meant to be used by a man." "I'm fine." Asha didn't fight Nathaniel's assistance in getting up. "But if I can't use the gem, I can't beat Valinus." The ranger felt as if he had just gone 10 rounds with a minotaur. "Or get us out of here," Nathaniel said, with a concerned glance at Rayna. Nesta picked up his staff of bone. "I cannot help you with the use of the gem, but I can show you the way out." "If you know the way out, why haven't you already taken it?" Nathaniel asked, pointedly. Nesta held up a finger. "I said I can show you a way out. I didn't say you could just walk out." Asha leant against the cave wall and balled his fist, testing the strength of his grip. "The Eastern Pass." "Yes," Nesta agreed. "There is a cave to the east, which leads onto the beach of the Shining Coast. The entrance back to Nightfall is crawling with monsters, but the Eastern Pass is home to only one beast."
"There was no creature when I escaped," Asha replied, nodding at Phelan to let her know he would be fine.
"There is now. I have been unable to put it down."
"I brought magic."
Asha looked to Phelan and Rayna.
"We can put it down."
Nesta slowly nodded his head.
"Can you all run?"
"Yes," Nathaniel replied. "Why?" "Because it's the only way to move around down here." Nesta shifted the boulder and crouched low, his head tilted. "The way is clear to our right."
"And to our left?" Asha asked.
"A touch of magic may be required." Nesta stood aside and faced Rayna. "I will go." Phelan stepped in front of the princess and made for the small hole. Asha drew his silver short sword, lined with runes that would make slicing monsters open all the easier. The elf rolled into the tunnel and dashed to the side. The beasts of the pit were waiting. Rayna went next and added her own destructive spells to the mix. Both elves set the tunnel alight with fire and lightning. After Nathaniel left the cave, Asha placed a firm hand against Nesta's chest and leaned in to his ear. "Do anything to get them hurt, and I will remove your head myself." With that, Asha collected the gem and exited the cave with Nasta. The tunnel was filled with the carcasses of dog-sized monsters and the smell of burning flesh. Like all the creatures that roamed under Nightfall, they were all teeth and sharp legs, with very little to distinguish between head and body. "More are coming," Nasta declared. "Follow me." Asha had them follow his old master, with him at the back. The orbs drifted away, and his extra senses kicked back in, relaying the dire environment through which they ran. Something heavier and larger was chasing them now. His ears pricked up at the sound of hard shells being crunched underfoot. Whatever it was, it had just passed Nasta's cave and ran over the bodies. More magic erupted up ahead as something akin to a snake dropped out of a hole in the roof. Rayna blasted it with ice and launched another one into the wall. Nathaniel was hacking at it, but the princess's spells were enough to ward the others away. Asha caught up in their wake and decapitated one of the slithering creatures as he ran by. In the pit, it was impossible to keep track of the time. Only exhaustion gave the ranger any indication of how long they had been running. With Nasta still running as if he were a younger man, Asha couldn't let himself fall behind, though he often reminded himself of the battle and the journey he had recently undertaken. More than once, he had caught up with Nathaniel and grabbed him by the arm to pull him along. The knight had to keep up with the elves in order to stay in the light. After another skirmish with a cousin of the Sandstalkers, the group ran out of a cave and entered another. But for the briefest of moments, the blue sky could be seen above, as they moved through the gorge. Phelan unleashed a telekinetic spell upon the cave behind them, collapsing the entrance and barring the monsters from following them. "We're almost there." Nasta said the words at such a level that only Asha's extra senses could hear him. The eastern pass was easy to detect, if not for the light at the end of the tunnel, but the foul odor that dwelled in the cavern. The group crouched beside Nasta Nal'akit, taking cover behind a collection of stalagmites. Nasta gestured to the floating orbs. "Send them out," he whispered. The elves commanded the orbs to fly out into the cavern and bring light to its darkest corners. Due to the large opening, the ambience inside the cavern was too light for Asha to use his extra senses, but his human eyes found the monster easily enough. The orbs drifted high and revealed the tucked-up legs of a creature the ranger had never seen before. The light disturbed it, and the monster scurried down the cavern wall, exposing its hideous body and sizable bulk. "What is that?" Nathaniel wore bravery as if it were his only expression, but Asha could see the cracks. This was a monster no man should ever have to see. Nasta stroked his goatee. "Man cannot name what it has never seen. I have simply come to call it a bastard." Asha could see that it had six legs and a thick body with no discernible head, but its tail was long and ended with three vicious prongs. The ranger examined his silver sword and wondered if it would be enough to slay the beast. "It is foul, no doubt." Phelan stood up with little care. "But it is just another monster."
"Phelan!"
Rayna hissed, but her companion was already striding into the cavern. Asha groaned and moved to join her. One last push and they would be free of the pit, and the rest would find them all. Decades of training in Nightfall hadn't prepared him for much more than this. Rayna rushed out to fight with them, and Nathaniel quickly followed with his sword ready. Nasta unsheathed Reaver and swung it around a few times to limber up. It had been a long time since Asher had seen the old man fight. The bastard reacted instantly and released an unnatural shrill of alarm. Asher braced himself as its six legs projected it across the cavern with a speed that wouldn't be stopped by any blade. Phelan was an elf for 400 years, however, and she wasn't wielding any blade. She raised both of her arms and thrust the bastard into the stalactites above. The spell was so powerful that the beast broke through the rock and dented the cavern roof. When it fell back to the ground, Rayna was already waiting with a fire spell. Burning it didn't stop the bastard from trying to get back up, however. Its four unbroken legs had it coming for the elves with a vengeance, and a gnashing of teeth surrounding a thick tongue with a large sucker on the end. Phelan cast a spell of ice, which had the monster's tongue pinned to the ground with an icicle.
"Asha!"
Nasta's call was too late to warn the ranger. A short sword flew out of the darkness behind them, its tip heading for Asher's head. Nasta stepped in and cut the sword down mid-flight with a flick of his bone staff. The blade careened away, but it was followed by a group of Arrakesh. The bastard whipped its tail about and had the elves diving for cover. In the same moment, the assassins descended on them. The monster was screaming in pain and fury, its ire aimed at Phelan. The Arrakesh paid it little heed, however, and attacked only the group.
"Give me the gem, Asher!"
Aladir entered the cavern with his magical blade in hand. "At this point, a swift death is all I can promise." Asher headbutted the closest assassin and threw him under the scurrying monster tackling Phelan. The assassin was trampled to death as the elf danced about the bastard, firing spell after spell. The ranger allowed Nathaniel to intercept the next Arrakesh so that he could remove the other short sword from his back.
"Together!" Nasta joined him.
"No, help them!"
Asher shoved his old master away and ran for Aladir. The two collided in a flurry of sparks as the twin blades met one another for the first time in combat. Asher used his silver sword to take advantage of Aladir's exposed areas, always keeping him busy with the magical blade. After 3 days without rest and the wounds of a battle still plaguing his body, the ranger might as well have been fighting in a lake of mud. His attacks were sloppy and predictable, making it easy for the elf to evade his extra sword. Rayna's bow could be heard over the melee, every arrow bringing an end to an assassin. Nasta weaved between the princess and the greycoat, offering his deadly talents wherever possible. Had Asher not been in a fight for his life, he would have marveled at the old man's abilities. As it was, the ranger could only glimpse his extraordinary skills. Aladir sidestepped his next attack and kicked Asher in the gut, throwing him further down the cavern towards the light. They had all been pushed towards the light, with the Arrakesh coming at them with relentless force. Only Phelan was stuck in the recesses of the cavern, locked in battle with the bastard. Her spells ignited the cave and created flashes of light that wiped away the shadows.
"You can't save them, Ranger,"
Aladir push-kicked Asher to the ground.
"You can't even save yourself."
Asher wasn't one for words. Instead, he roared in defiance and launched himself at the elf. His blade slashed in every direction, but found only Aladir's white robes.
"Asher!"
Nathaniel ducked and sliced his opponent's gut before charging Aladir. The third blade kept the elf on the defensive, but it took only a few evasions for the elf to land an elbow in the knight's face, knocking him to the ground. Rayna was torn between helping him and helping Phelan. Asher wanted to send her to Phelan's side, but if he wavered for just a second, Aladir would claim his life. It mattered not, as two Arrakesh set upon the princess and forced her towards the light, where the sea air was finally breaking through the bastard's musk. Nasta dispatched his attackers with apparent ease and moved to assist Rayna, while simultaneously dragging Nathaniel out of the way, before Aladir could plunge his sword into his gut. Asher made sure he was between them, with his companions and the light to his back.
"Is this what you wanted?" Aladir spat. "You wanted to fight me. It is only the skills that I have taught you that have kept you on your feet thus far."
Asher wiped the blood from his eye and blinked slowly.
"You talk too much."
The ranger's next swing was far too wide and too slow. Aladir kicked him again before the swing could fall, sending him to the ground with another painful impact. The bastard screamed in the background, and Asher caught a glimpse of the elf burying her scimitar into its hard shell. The monster's outcry was quickly followed by her own screams as its wicked tail curled about and speared her leg.
"Phelan!"
Rayna shouted over the melee. Asher was no longer watching Aladir, who was only a few feet away and closing in with his short sword. Instead, the ranger had locked eyes with Phelan, who had limped forwards and fallen to the ground at the back of the cavern. The bastard was dead behind her, but the elf could barely stand. Everything happened at once then, and Asher knew what was coming. He could see it in her eyes. The elf raised her hand and brought down the stalactite between Asher and Aladir, separating them momentarily and giving the ranger a chance to escape. Her telekinetic spell didn't stop there, however. Aladir, caught off guard by the falling stalactite, was hurled backwards into the cavern.
"Run!" Phelan hissed. "Run!"
Aladir was already recovering and heading back to Asher when Phelan screamed her last spell, unleashing a powerful wave of telekinetic energy into the cavern.
No!
Rayna yelled over the breaking of rock. Asher tried to pull himself up, intending to run back into the cavern, but a hand grasped the straps on his back and dragged him towards the light, away from Phelan. Rayna continued to scream in protest as Nathaniel pulled her back with both arms, careful not to trip over the dead Arrakesh. The ranger kicked out and attempted to break free of Nasta's grip, but there was no energy left in him. Aladir ran for the light, seeing his own doom in the crumbling cavern. The smaller rocks were quickly followed by larger, immovable boulders and slabs that dropped to the ground. Within seconds, both Aladir and Phelan were hidden behind a new wall of rock.
Quickly!
Nesta shouted over the collapse. The rest of the cavern imploded behind them, until they were back under the sky, and the eastern pass was completely buried. The air filled with dust, pushing them further into the beach to escape its suffocating effects. Nesta released Asher, but the ranger couldn't find his legs to stand, as all strength had finally left him. Rayna broke free of Nathaniel and ran back to the collapsed tunnel, her tears and screams all mixing into one. Phelan was gone. Asher knew that neither of them could have survived that, but he could take no solace in knowing that Aladir was dead when it came at such a price. Nathaniel ran to Rayna, and the two fell on their knees in a tight embrace. The knight cupped her head in his chest and let his own tears streak down his cheeks. Nesta walked away, towards the lapping sea, his own emotions impossible to tell. Asher pulled Paldora's gem out of his belt and inspected it through teary eyes. Was it worth it? Was the gem worth Phelan's life? He had the only weapon capable of stopping Valinus, and he couldn't use it. The urge to throw it into the Aedean was overwhelming. He gripped the gem tight as new tears ran down his face, clearing the dirt and blood. No. He wouldn't throw it away. Phelan's life would have been for nothing then. Asher knew that if it was the last thing he ever did, he would learn how to master Paldora's gem, and then he would destroy Valinus. After a lasting look at Rayna and Nathaniel, the ranger let his head fall back onto the sand. He let go and allowed the empty abyss of his subconscious take over his senses. Phelan's face was the last thing he imagined before rest finally found him. Chapter 38 The Echoes. The King of Elves sat on his balcony and gazed into the sky, as he had done for most of the day. After his servants addressed him in the finest armor, word had quickly reached him of the spectacle in the heavens above. Seeing Paldora's star break its eternal cycle and reveal itself in the light of day had been a harrowing sight. Unlike the mortals of the world, Elim had seen the star soar through the night sky every century without fail. This wasn't supposed to happen. The rest of his kin had seen the phenomenon, but their reaction had yet to reach him. Elim had spent his centuries as king, convincing his people that the echoes of fate were not to be believed, and that his sister had been in her death throes at the hands of the vicious outlanders. Time and time again, he had been justified in his abandonment of the gods, as Paldora's star continued to grace a starlit sky. But now, the king had been trying to recall every detail of that fateful moment when Nalana, his sister, had said the prophetic words out loud. He was still young at the time, and a very young ruler by elven standards, but he had commanded the current High Guardian to assemble his best warriors and accompany the new king into the wild moors to search for Nalana. Elim's frustration with his sister had always been trumped by his adoration of her. Not only a princess, but a dragorn, Nalana was loved and respected by all who met her. Being a dragorn, however, Elim had been powerless to stop her from entering that wild forest. It had all been for the boy Asher. At the time, it had been believed that the young boy had fled back into the wild moors with Paldora's gem, after escaping the Battle of Elithia. Of course, Elim knew the truth of it now. For days the young king and his warriors had scoured the forest of man. Elim had been sure his sister had already found the boy and doubled back,
and would be looking for him in the new palace, in the Evermore. She hadn't. That wretched forest would be the last thing she ever saw. On the sixth day, Nalana had stumbled across the search party, covered in blood and sweat, her agony easy to see. Elam had taken her in his arms while his escort spread out and prepared for any ambush. "Where is Tovan?" Elam had asked his sister, believing that had her dragon been present, she would never have come to such harm. Nalana groaned.
"He did not come. The council."
Elam had recalled that the dragons were in deep council to decide who should succeed Garganafran, who had perished in the amber spell. Of course, wherever Tovan was right now, he would be suffering the same wounds as Nalana. Such was their bond. "Where have you been?" Elam had asked, tears running freely from his eyes.
"I couldn't find him," Nalana croaked. "Asher."
"It doesn't matter." Elam remembered stroking her face and feeling how cold she was. "Valinus is vanquished. The gem no longer matters." The warriors had closed in now, finding no threat in the area. They had all known that the wounds Nalana had suffered would be the end of her. Even magic could not defeat what death had so obviously claimed.
"I found something. There's more to the Outlanders than we thought."
Nalana's face crumpled in pain.
"I found the echoes. The echoes of fate."
Elam looked to his High Guardian, but all the elves had worn the same expression of confusion. The young king had seen others on the edge of death, and knew well that their final words could be unintelligible. He held his sister close, and bade her to hush, hoping to give her a peaceful passage.
"Valinus will return," Nalana managed.
Her crystal eyes glazed over, and she took a breath, as if the princess was gasping for her last hope at life. These favored elves fall and lose their way, as man's anger devours all dragon's fire. The immortal man is set to rise, bringing the Dark One closer to his most dangerous desire. Paldora's celestial gem graces daylight sky, and in its beauty ordains calamity. Only alliance and trust between two shores offers an intimation of hope and a glimpse of eternity. Children of fire and flame offer great promise, but only one perceives the time we will fall. As the gods recast their fortune and power, one will suffer the burden of destiny for all. Nalana's final effort robbed her of another breath. Elam had seen the impression her words had on his soldiers, as if the gods themselves had just spoken to them. The king had only wanted to hold his sister, the young elf unaware of the impact these words would have on his people. It had certainly made his task all the harder in the years to come. And Elam had no doubt that there were still those in his kingdom who held faith in the gods, but they hadn't seen what he had seen that day. In the waning sun, as the group was preparing to depart the wild moors with Nalana's body, they had been set upon by a band of outlanders. Elam had been more than happy to cut them all down, his anger bubbling over, but the skirmish had been bloody and more violent than he had anticipated, resulting in the king being separated from the High Guardian and his warriors. Not far from where they had found Nalana stumbling through the trees, Elam had found the entrance to a cave adorned with skulls and various animal bones on pikes, a typical outlander home in his eyes. The cave, however, had been filled with pieces of canvas that upon closer inspection were in fact pieces of human skin. The nearest human leather had been stretched between two wooden poles and used as parchment. Elim's command of the human language had been very basic, having only picked up some of their words from Nalana. But the writing on the skin was familiar. It was echoes of fate, scribed in blood and signed at the bottom with a black hand, like all the others. Those words were not from the gods, but from the humans. His sister had found the prophecy and had clearly been studying it, but they were not godly words, as his warriors had then believed. This scene had fueled his own belief over the centuries that the gods were not real, that any god who could support Valinus or give prophetic words to savages was not a divine creator. Elam had kept his own findings that day to himself,
He could not stain the memory of his sister any more than he already had. It had been a burden in itself to convince the elven people that her last words were that of the dying, and not to be misinterpreted as holy. Elim looked down at the chest resting on his table. The rectangular box was engraved with ancient symbols and elven glyphs, keeping the chest shut to all but him. To the king's touch, it was as if the chest had never been locked, opening with the greatest of ease. Inside he found the rolled-up scroll he had taken from the wild moors so long ago. Unraveling it, he found the echoes of fate and the black handprint in the corner. For years he had kept it hidden. The scroll's existence wasn't proof that the gods were fake, but it would have seen his sister made a fool of in her dying moments. Elim quickly rolled it back up and tucked it into his belt, under his robes. It would remind him in the coming days that he determined his own fate and that of his people, not some god in the sky. "My lord." Varro was in the doorway to his balcony. Elim retired his reverie and tore his eyes from the empty chest. "Are we ready?" Varro straightened his back. "We are, my lord. The ships have been assembled and stocked. The army is on the beach, awaiting your command." The king glanced at the sky and looked back at his high guardian. "You saw it?" Varro hesitated. "Yes, my lord, we all saw it. A beautiful display of nature. Nothing more." Elim smiled, though he didn't quite believe the elf. "You have put your faith in me, Varro. You have put your faith in my vision for this world." The king stood up and clasped the High Guardian's forearm. "We will rule Verda as the true gods, the only gods that matter." With that, Varro threw a crystal into the king's room and opened a portal. Elim strode through and stepped onto the beach of the Opal Coast on Ada's western shore. Hundreds of ships lined the ocean with white and blue sails, while the beach itself was occupied by 6,000 elves, all lined up and ready to go. Elim admired his warriors, who stood in complete silence, the epitome of discipline. The only sound came from the lapping waves and the trees in the breeze. Elim turned to Varro. "I always envisioned this scene to have dragons in it. Even with the dragon wall closed to us, we will still claim victory, my lord." "Seeing the army you have trained, I don't doubt it. When Ilion is ours, and some measure of peace is accomplished, I will return to Ada and discover the secrets of Mount Garganathan. I would see the dragon eggs recovered and their kind returned to these lands." Elim hoped that would see the return of Adalandra, his wife. He could only push away his thoughts of her for so long. Varro bowed his head. "We will see Verda return to its natural state." Elim paced the sandy beach, meeting the eyes of his warriors. "The gods are false," he whispered to himself, before announcing, "The gods are false. We, the immortals, are the true rulers of Verda." The army cheered in response. "We set sail today to forge a new world for our people, a world free of Valinus and his evil, a world free of man and its corruption. The elven nation will rise. We will bring about a time of peace and prosperity. If man must be wiped away to achieve this, then so be it." The army cheered again. "Go now! To war! To victory!" The army continued to cheer as they turned about and made for the ships. For the first time in history, elves would go to war with man. Epilogue. Phelan dragged herself over the sharp rocks and the warm carcass of the dead monster. Everything hurt. Breathing had become a laborious effort, with little reward. The elf had more cuts than she could count, and healing wasn't an option right now. What was left of her magic had a single purpose. Killing Aladir Yarathanil. The head of Alanis' hand was only feet away, stuck on his knees, wedged between the collapsing cavern and the slab of hard ground beneath him. Both of his hands were raised as he exuded enough force to keep the tons of broken stalactites from crushing him. The shield of pure magic flared against the jagged rocks, generating the only source of light and guiding Phelan.
It took some time before she made it through the narrow gaps, but her final effort in life was worth it. Before her now, and helpless to defend himself, was Aladir. The elf was dripping with sweat and blood, his own injuries not far from mirroring Phelan's. His arms shook, and his teeth were firmly clenched as he watched her crawl ever closer. Phelan hoped he could see the look in her eye. Despite her long life, there hadn't been anything Phelan could say she hated. Looking at the elf responsible for so many deaths, however, she knew there was room in her heart for such a feeling after all. With every inch she crawled, that rage Phelan had been told lived inside of her was finally bubbling to the surface. For years she had clung to the ideology of her queen, Adelandra, believing that they could be more than that. Not now. Not after everything Aladir had put them through. It took everything the elf had left to get to her knees and face him. Killing Aladir would be the sweetest way to leave this world, she thought. The two locked eyes in the flaring light, both aware that this would be their grave. If, Aladir struggled to speak, if you kill me, we both die. Fenn glanced at the mountain of rock that threatened to bury them. So be it. With a wicked grin, the elf looked back at Aladir and opened both of her hands, igniting them with brilliant blue flames. This is the end of Book 2, but the story continues with Relic of the Gods, Echoes of Fate, Book 3. You have been listening to Empire of Dirt, Echoes of Fate, Book 2, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr, Text Copyright 2018 by Philip C. Quaintrell, Production Copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing, All Rights Reserved. Prologue. Thousands of years ago, on the highest slopes of the Vengora Mountains, where the air was thin and the wind a bitter chill, the King of the First Men and the One True Kingdom surveyed all of Verda. Atalan braced his hands against the icy cold balcony of Caliban's stateroom and looked down on the world that was rightfully his. Ilion was his birthright, and only he should rule over it for all time. And yet, Atalan looked high into the sky, as he had done his entire life, searching for dragons. The king knew he would find none, for why else would he have built a fortress so high, where even dragons dare not fly? It was those dragons who had robbed him of his birthright, those beasts who served no purpose but to sustain mankind, as every other living creature did. Their rebellion and that of the Dragorn had cost him his armies, his home, and the chance to live forever. The wind and the snow beat against the invisible shield that surrounded him, generated by his staff, which stood by his side without aid. The shield flared with a fiery orange here and there, but still, the staff filled the sphere with enough heat to keep the cold out of his bones. The thought had Atalan inspecting the back of his hand, a hand that reflected his increasing age. Prominent veins, dark spots, and flesh more akin to a cracked desert floor, reminded the king that he was growing closer to death with every second. Both magic and science had failed him. Atalan's first attempt at prolonging life had resulted in an entirely new species he had no desire to see again. The elf, as they were apparently calling themselves, were nothing but a reminder that immortality would forever be an unattainable gift that could only be given, never received. A spiteful part of him wanted to wipe the elves away, denying them the life that should have been his own. But war with the dragons had consumed him. Their fire and ice had chipped away at his one true kingdom until there was almost nothing left. Almost. Atalan's staff released a soft pitch that only the king could hear, alerting him to a presence on the balcony. It could not be Nias, for the wizard never left his crystal pools in days of late. The footsteps were light too, excluding Lord Crate. It could only be one other. Peldora? Atalan called softly, his voice just breaking the sound of the wind. Your Grace? Peldora practically glided onto the balcony in her black dress, its magical silk glistening as if the stars were trapped inside. Atalan commanded his sphere to expand, and encompass his young wife, taking her into his globe of warmth. Inside his spell, they were immune to nature's harsh environment. "You might be my 9th wife, but you're certainly my favorite wife." Atalan enjoyed the smile on his wife's youthful face. How he envied her youth. "You mean I am the youngest wife you have ever had?" Paldora replied with a soft kiss on his cheek. "I could still have younger," the king thought, though the mischievous idea was fleeting, his mind weighed down with visions of what was to come. "I have failed us all, Paldora." Atalan crossed his arms and cupped his white beard. "There is still time, Your Grace." Paldora clung to his arm, bringing her lips close to his ear. "Nias has almost completed his work." "Life beyond the veil is not the immortality I envisioned for our people. From Nias's estimations, life will be very different to the one we know." Paldora clung tighter still. "But it will be life." "What is life to be without a kingdom? Without my kingdom? Ilion is mine!" Atalan shrugged his wife off and shouted, "Those wicked beasts have taken it from me!" Lightning sparked in the highest heavens, and thunder clapped across the sky as the mage unleashed his wrath. "If it is the last thing I ever do, I will see every one of them stripped of their wings. I'll have their scales peeled off, and their hearts will feed my dogs for an eternity. I'll breed them just to watch them suffer." Paldora's expression should have been one of shock, but unlike his previous wives, Paldora could only smile at her king's remarks, almost relishing in his descriptions. "They had no right to deny you immortality, Your Grace," Paldora purred into his ear. "They should have granted you the same as any dragon rider." "The dragon riders are not without blame," Atalan spat. "They should have shared their secrets with their king." Paldora leaned on his shoulder and said, "And now they are all dead for their betrayal. There is only us." Atalan's staff hummed again, alerting only the king to another arrival. The sound of his armor, crafted from the bones of dragons, could be heard over the chilling breeze. "Lord Krayt!" "Your Grace." Krayt, Atalan's minister of war, stepped onto the balcony. "What news of my people?" the king asked, looking to the south, where the wild moors sat behind the mist of clouds. "They have reached the moors, but the dragons have hounded them every step of the way, Your Grace. Without any more chrysalith, we have only our magic to keep them at bay. I advise staying in Caliban." Krayt was not a large man, but his talents lay not in his muscles, but in his brain. Atalan had always valued his opinion and took heed of his strategy in war. But they were not at war anymore. Now they were fleeing, clawing to stay alive. "I promised my people immortality, Lord Krayt." Atalan faced his minister. "I am a man of my word." The three retreated into the depths of Caliban until its stone halls became the Vengoran rock of the cavern. The crystal pools illuminated the space in brilliant white light as they churned within their pits. Nias had been cultivating the pools for decades, a fact that was evident by the cavern's unique sense of up and down. Nias himself was standing over a pool, with his staff stirring the liquid like crystals. To Atalan and the others, it appeared as if the wizard was standing upside down, between two stalactites. Without hesitation, the three walked up the nearest wall and joined Nias by the pool. The wizard was only a few years younger than the king, but his long dark hair had retained much of its natural color. His normally clean-shaven face had grown wild with graying stubble, and his pallor had taken a turn. His eyes were wide and never left the glowing pools to greet his king. "Is it ready?" Atalan asked. Nias tilted his head, but remained fixed on the crystals. "It is." Atalan had never been a patient man, or even a merciful one, but reservations were required when dealing with genius. Nias was perhaps his greatest weapon, besides his own command of the magical arts, and he knew when to push him and when to simply leave him be. The wizard tentatively reached into the pool, his hand gently displacing the ever-changing crystals. The veil, as Nias had come to call it, was removed from the warm bath and presented to them as a trophy. Atalan had never seen it before, but his demands of the wizard had been quite specific. The golden sphere fit perfectly, cradled in his hand, no bigger than Nias's palm. Its gleaming surface was layered in beautiful glyphs, branded as it was with powerful magic. Nias flattened his hand, and the sphere came